Welcome to the Easy EdTech Podcast with your host, Dr. Monica Burns.
Hello there. My name is Monica Burns. I'm a former classroom teacher and now spend my time sharing tips, strategies, and activity ideas to make EdTech integration easier in your classroom. You may be familiar with my books like Tasks Before Apps or my blog, classtechtips.com. Whether we've met at a conference or special event, you've followed along with my EdTech tips for years, or simply joining in for the first time today, I'm so glad you're here. In this bite-sized podcast, you'll get some quick info and actionable tips to energize and elevate teaching and learning. You can head to my website, classtechtips.com/podcast, for all of the show notes. That's where you'll find the transcript for each episode, links to resources, and any of the free downloads I mention. Now, this month, I have a new spring cleaning freebie for you. It's called 10 Quick Tips to Organize Your Google Drive, and you can grab it on the free stuff page of my blog using the link under the podcast description or by going straight to classtechtips.com/springcleaning. It includes 10 of my favorite quick tips for keeping your Google Drive organized. If you're not into Google, these tips can be customized for your Dropbox or Office 365 account too. This week's episode is titled, What Does Digital Citizenship Really Mean? With Dr. Kristen Mattson. I first connected with Dr. Mattson on Clubhouse and was so excited to chat about digital citizenship and her new books from ISTE. One of them just arrived, the book that we talk about in this episode, just arrived in the mail this week. Now, Kristen shares lots of actionable information, and I've included her info and a few links right where you are listening to this episode. And you can find all of the links to the resources she shares right here in the show notes at classtechtips.com/podcast. Let's jump into the conversation. Well, welcome and thank you so much for joining me for today's podcast. I had a chance to take a peek at some of your work and I'm really excited for this conversation. I know we've been in some of the same Clubhouse rooms recently, which is a weird, funny thing to say now in 2021. And so I know I shared a little bit about your work with listeners already, but would love for you to start off our conversation today just sharing a bit about your role in education and what does your day-to-day look like?
Yeah, so my role in education changed dramatically this year, just like everybody's, right? But I went from being a middle school English teacher to a high school librarian to now just an adjunct professor and an educational consultant. And I made that decision prior to COVID, but of course, all of my friends back at school were like, wow, Mattson, you picked a really great year to take off. But yeah, my day-to-day looks like a lot of Zoom teaching, probably like most of your listeners. I teach three different courses. I teach at the community college level, pre-service teachers, and then I teach graduate students who are interested in becoming school librarians or who are pursuing some specialty like public librarianship with children. And I get to teach really cool classes like media literacy and digital citizenship and educational technology. And it's really fun. I love it. So some teaching and a lot of writing and researching. I like to spend time connecting with folks like you on Clubhouse and on social media and just kind of learning from other people in the field. So it's flexible. Every day is different, which is what's fun.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. And a lot of wonderful things going on, including you have a new book with ISTE called Ethics in a Digital World that I want to make sure we talk about while we're together today. But before we dive in, I'm hoping that we can kind of set the stage for listeners and really unpack this term of digital citizenship, which I know connects very much to your work. And I'm hoping that you can kind of help us think through, you know, we hear that term digital citizenship in a lot of different contexts, but when we kind of come down to it, what does it really mean when we think about being a good digital citizen and educating digital citizens and just digital citizenship in general?
Yeah. So the questions that you just asked me ended up being the driving questions for my doctoral research, because it was maybe 7 or so years ago where my district pulled all 32 school librarians together and said, we have to teach some, you know, digital citizenship, internet safety kind of stuff. It's required by law. And they gave us the task to go out and see what kind of free resources we could find, try some things with our students, and then, you know, kind of bring back what we learned by utilizing those resources so that we can maybe come up with like a systemic plan for the district. And so I set off on my homework and I started Googling. And my biggest frustration point was that everywhere I looked, digital citizenship was defined differently. It was talked about differently. Some of the resources were very like stranger danger, the internet is a dangerous place type of resources. Others, you know, were a little bit different than that. And so my doctoral research was to take 65 different pieces of like free lessons that were just floating around on the internet. And I tried to come up with a consensus definition. And I wasn't happy with what I found. So my work moving forward has been to try to help kind of redefine this term. And so ISTE, I think, is doing a really, really great job of helping to kind of redefine this term a little bit and move away from that, you know, the internet is a scary place and we have to teach you how to keep yourself safe, to a more empowered description. And when I have to give like an elevator speech, I guess, to define digital citizenship, my hope is that we can start to talk about it as the set of skills and mindsets that all people need to be active participants in a digital world. And that's a lot of things, right? It's technological literacies. How do I use these devices? How do I troubleshoot? It's media and information literacy. But then I also think we have all of those mindsets, like the social and emotional well-being and our habits of mind. And, you know, how do we display empathy online? How do we engage in productive dialogue in online spaces? So for me, a digital citizen is sort of like the pinnacle. It's something that I want to make sure that I achieve with my students. And I know I have lots of different skills that I have to work on so that they can be those active participants in digital communities.
I appreciate that breakdown because it is a term that's so dynamic. And like you said, I can't even imagine sorting through 65 different examples to look for some of those common threads of pieces with your work, because I know things that I come across, it's just been very much all over the place. And you pointed as well to ISTE, right? And the ISTE standards. And that's another great resource for folks. I know I was working on the day that we're recording this, I was working with a group of New York educators this morning, and we were looking at some of the pieces of the ISTE standards for students. So I appreciate that piece too, right? Taking a look at that. And so, you know, you mentioned sorting through lots of resources and going out and looking for different things. Now, if someone's looking for a digital citizenship curriculum for their school, maybe they're making more of a school or district-wide set of decisions, or if they're looking for something for their classroom because they're committed to this idea and need perhaps some supplemental resources, what kind of things should they look for? You mentioned a couple components, but what are those kinds of resources that maybe they should spend more time thinking about?
Yeah, I think one of the big things that was lacking for me when I looked at digital citizenship curriculum, and this was back in 2015, 2016, a couple of things that were lacking were student voice and student experience as being vital within the curriculum. So a lot of it was adults kind of talking down at students, adults giving students rules to follow. And I would really encourage teachers to look for resources that allow students to share their thoughts and their experiences as digital citizens. I have a really simple free download on my website that is just 50 would you rather questions for digital citizenship conversations. Kids love would you rathers. And if I can put a would you rather in front of them, like, would you rather win a trip to Hawaii or get free Wi-Fi and data for life? It opens up, you know, it opens up like those conversations about our technology habits in a really safe, low stakes sort of way. I also love resources that can empower students with the skills and mindsets to be good digital decision makers, as opposed to resources that only list rules. And so one example that I can give is, you know, if the rule is put your phone away in class, don't look at your phone in class, as opposed to a lesson that talks about, you know, why are our phones so hard to put down? Why do our thumbs just kind of navigate to those apps all the time? And if I can empower students with some of like the psychology behind the way apps are built to keep us coming back. Then my students can start to be more reflective and they can start to pay attention to the way that those apps are kind of manipulating them as opposed to them manipulating the app. So I love resources that can empower students with those skills and knowledge and mindsets. And then I also think like resources that can help you really extend what you're already doing in the classroom. I think a lot of people hear digital citizenship and they think it's one more thing that they have to fit into their day. And that's difficult. We already have very packed curriculum, right? So if we can think about something we're already doing in the classroom, like maybe reading a picture book about what it means to be a good friend, maybe we can extend that lesson just a little bit further and read another picture book like Nerdy Birdie Tweets, which talks about a bird who's trying to balance his online friends and his offline friends. When I'm talking about something in like a high school social studies classroom, where we're talking about freedom of speech. I think many students are kind of curious how freedom of speech plays out in digital spaces. And so we can just sort of continue that conversation and go a little bit deeper with it, as opposed to having to sort of fit or find ways to lump digital citizenship in as a separate thing.
Yeah, I so appreciate that because, you know, a lot of times when we have conversations and we talk about these different skills, it feels like it's different than what we're doing as opposed to part of what we're doing. So whether it's that read aloud example, those would you rather prompts, which I'll make sure to include a link to in the show notes so people can find that on your website, right? Those are the kind of things that might go right into the work that's already happening, but then lead to these other conversations. Or when there is some time allocated for something that might feel like it's just digital citizenship, it's been reinforced or introduced in all these other ways. And so, you know, you mentioned something about the idea that some students might have more of the psychological conversations, right? Some things we might be introducing to students for the first time, getting them thinking about it for the first time. So I'm wondering, you know, what does digital citizenship look like in an elementary or a middle or a high school classroom? I imagine there are some similarities, but also some differences that are important to note.
Yeah, for me, I like to think about different layers or levels of digital citizenship that I think fit kind of very nicely into those different age categories. When our students are young, we're really just starting to get them to think about like their relationships with devices, right? How do I set up a safe password? How do I navigate these spaces? How do I figure out what's off limits to me or what's okay for me to kind of explore in a digital space? I think as our kids get a little bit older, unfortunately, we kind of start to drop off with our digital citizenship conversation. Just as we're handing students devices or their parents are handing them devices. And so I think at the middle school level, we really have to start talking about how technology is being used within their relationships. I worked with a middle school health class that always had a unit called Healthy Relationships, and they talked about friends and problem solving and, you know, about male-female relationships, romantic relationships, family relationships, whatever. There was no component of technology embedded in that unit. We know that middle school kids are living out so many of their relationships through devices. And so I think at that middle school level, we can really start to talk about what does it mean to be in community with other people through a screen. And sometimes that community are people that we know offline. And sometimes that community includes people that we've only met because of the internet. I think at the high school level, our kids are ready to start having those conversations about how technology is impacting the world and how are the devices in our hands sort of changing who we are as a society? How can our devices help propel areas of social justice and equity? How do the laws and, you know, the norms and things that we study in history, how do those work today? Freedom of speech being, you know, one of those examples. And I think our high school students are really hungry to start to dig into some of those topics. And the English classroom, social studies classroom, anywhere we're kind of talking about the humanities, I think is a nice natural extension to bring in aspects of technology and the internet.
And what a great way to make sure that that content is relevant for students, especially at that high school level where maybe engagement is a challenge, right? And so, you know, you mentioned the idea of, you know, as a school, as a family, right? Students might, or children might get access to devices. I know a lot of times, you know, we make that assumption, well, kids know how TikTok works, or they know how this works or that works, but it doesn't quite mean that they know all the other parts, right? Or all the other components that are there. And so, you know, I'm curious if you've come across any kind of favorite online resources you might recommend to someone who is interested in exploring these ideas with their students. I know we've talked about some really great big ideas and some things that you can pull into some lessons and activities or discussions you might already be doing with students. But if someone's looking for a specific source online to head to, are there any that you would recommend?
Yeah, I think most people are probably familiar with Common Sense Education's digital citizenship curriculum, which I think, again, is a really, really great place to start, especially for our younger students. There's some great lessons there. But I think too often that's where we stop. And if we want to try to embed some of these things within content areas, and we really want to make sure our kids have skills as well, some of my favorite resources that are completely free and available to anyone are the News Literacy Project. They have a ton of really great resources, but one of my favorites is their Checkology platform. I would say it's great for middle school students to go in and learn about, like, what is quality journalism? What is quality information? How do I determine whether or not the things that I'm reading online are fact or fiction, misinformation. And it's just a really great portal that, you know, students can go into and begin to navigate some of these different topics. The Stanford History Education Group has a great free online resource called the Civic Online Reasoning Lessons. And I would say these are really great for upper middle school and high school students. Again, it gets into all sorts of things like media and information literacy, how the internet plays a part in the democratic process. And what I really love about those tools is that they're all built on the Google platform. And so I can just jump online, make a copy of a Google Doc, and have a ready-to-go lesson for my students. They also have some assessments available as well. So you can use those assessments as like a pre-check, figure out what your kids know, and then you can pull those lessons in to help move them forward. And then one curriculum that maybe doesn't get as much attention here because it is a Canadian curriculum is the Civics curriculum. It's C-I-V-I-X. And they're doing a lot of the same work that News Literacy Project and the Stanford History Education Group are doing. But again, I always find that, like, having more resources to pull from is better than having fewer. So those are the three that I really would highly recommend if you're wanting to start working on some very specific skills about being a citizen of a digital community.
And I appreciate that list because, you just like you mentioned, I often go to Common Sense Media, right? And some of these are new to me, the ones that you mentioned today. So I'm excited to take a look at them too and just see what's out there. And the Google Slides connection, the ease of using resources that are ready to go with an assessment component just makes me happy, right? To know that you could put it into action right away. And now you've got a new book. We mentioned it at the beginning of the episode, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about it, kind of the story behind the book, what the book covers, and, you know, how it connects to our big topic for today.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse, but I'm kind of always thinking about the what's next. And so as soon as I got done with my digital citizenship dissertation, and I did write another ISTE book called Digital Citizenship in Action, which is, again, more about how are we empowering students and giving them opportunities to practice being these digital citizens. But I right away, my mind was like, what are we missing? There's got to be more. What haven't we talked about yet? And I got introduced to this work a little bit through Sophia Nobel's book, Algorithms of Oppression. And she was doing research around the same time that I was, around 2015. And she was looking at the ways that Google search algorithms were really perpetuating biases in society. So one of the examples that stands out from her book for me was she did a Google image search for the word doctor. And the first page of images was, you know, white men in medical looking coats, right? And it wasn't until page two of those image results that she started to see female doctors or doctors of color. And so her work kind of opened my eyes a little bit to the fact that, you know, technology isn't a neutral. We talk a lot about technology kind of being a neutral, and it's what you do with it that makes the difference. But there are humans that are building our technology, and humans are not neutral. And so I really started down that rabbit hole of reading and just kind of looking at, you know, how are these technologies that are being created by flawed humans maybe perpetuating flaws in society or changing society in ways that we didn't intend? So Ethics in a Digital World really encourages students and educators to look at that very real impact that technology has sort of had on us as a society and who we are as human beings. And the book is all set up just to promote like critical thinking and conversation, not only about the technologies that we use every day, but I know that our students are going to be the ones to go on to create the next big technologies. Mm-hmm. In schools, we're doing a really great job of making sure that they have access to coding and, you know, different STEM courses, and our libraries are becoming makerspaces, and we're talking about design thinking, and we're equipping them with all these technology skills to make really great tools. But I don't want us to do that at the sake of the humanities. And so this book really shows how we can pair the humanities, we can pair that ethical thinking alongside of the technology training so that the next generation is making products that are really helpful for us as a society.
Well, such an important perspective and such important work when we talk about not keeping things just in that computer science, you know, silo, but looking at the humanities aspect of it. And I think that when you open up that door to students, their conversations at all age levels can be really in depth when they start thinking about things through a new lens. And I'm going to make sure where everyone's listening, so if you're listening, you'll be able to find a link to the book and to more information to stay connected. But where can listeners connect with you? What's the best place to go if they have questions or want to learn more about your work?
Yeah, so I have a website where I blog and post resources and things. It's just drkmatson.com. And then I'm pretty much anywhere you can look on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. It's at Dr. K. Matson. It should be pretty easy to find me. But yeah, I love connecting with people because there's just always more to learn. So I'd be happy to connect with some of your listeners.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time today. So many great actionable tips and information. Really appreciate it. And I'll make sure that everyone knows where to find you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Monica. I appreciate it.
Let's finish up this episode like we always do and think about how to take this conversation and make this EdTech easy. First, review the idea of digital citizenship and the role it currently plays in your work. Next, identify moments you can bring in aspects of digital citizenship into your lessons. Then, look for activities like Would You Rather prompts. And finally, review supplemental resources for lessons you can customize for your students. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode. Go to classtechtips.com/podcast or click on where it says show notes. It should be a link right underneath the description for this episode. A quick reminder, this month I have a new spring cleaning freebie for you. It's called 10 Quick Tips to Organize Your Google Drive, and you can grab it on the free stuff page of my blog using the link under the podcast description or by going straight to classtechtips.com/springcleaning. It includes 10 of my favorite quick tips, ones I really use myself for keeping your Google Drive organized. And if you're not into Google, these tips are ones you can customize for your Dropbox, Office 365 account, you name it. Now, I love bringing you free resources like this podcast to energize and elevate teaching and learning. Can you do me a favor? If you like the podcast, scroll down wherever you're listening and leave a review. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you found this episode. Or tell a friend about the podcast. Post a link to this episode with something you learned or something you thought of on your favorite social media. And remember to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Just scroll to the bottom of the page, tap on Write a Review button, and leave a sentence on why you like the podcast. Thank you so much in advance for taking those quick extra steps. It means the world to me.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Easy EdTech Podcast wherever you're listening.